去。Left it yesterday at the point where we indicated to the drafters that they must go and try and accommodate what we had raised and then come back and refer to those areas and also to look at the areas that we had not covered to come up with some proposals. There is a document that has been circulated which represents what the drafters were able to do last night. And in order for us to understand this, I'm going to request that Advocate Jenkins and response to take us through that document and then we'll have a discussion on it. Who's going first? Okay, you finish everyone as advocate. Another advocate portion?
I wish. Far from it.
Yeah, I can't believe this thing,
sir. Thank you, Chair. Just a note quickly at the start, given the limited.
More into your mic.
Sorry. Given the limited time between yesterday afternoon and this morning, the document that's in front of you, I have to take full responsibility for. I took too long to put it together since Asuka Jenkins wasn't in the meeting yesterday. So that's all the errors are all mine. And all the clearly unlegal language and unclear definitions, they're all mine. The document is set up in two sections. The first section deals with the parts of the draft bill that we dealt with yesterday and notes the changes as emerged from the committee's discussions yesterday. So I'll just quickly go through those, Chair, and shall we then, well, we'll probably stop with each one and have a discussion where it's necessary. And then just go on with the second section. The changes to the definitions is just to note which fiscal framework definition to use, and note also that there's an additional line in the fiscal framework that asks for the estimates of borrowing for that financial year, in addition to the estimates of revenue, of all revenue. In order to also to address the revenue estimate so that there isn't confusion that you're actually referring to taxes, levies, charges and surcharges collected or received by the executive or by government, I propose that we define revenue in the definitions as it is defined in the Constitution, perhaps, to make clear that when we talk about revenue in the fiscal framework, because if you put tax revenue there's of course part of the budget that isn't tax revenue, that levies and charges and other types of revenue. So that would be the proposal for that clause. I'll get to the new, the additional definition that is there on revenue bills when I get to the revenue bills section. Okay, the change to clause 4 is just to note the fiscal responsibility clause wording that the committee decided on yesterday. Change to the current section 6, and that is the procedure prior to introducing the national budget. The changes here take into account the committee's decision yesterday to separate out the section 1 into a section that deals with what portfolio committees will do before the budget is introduced, and the second one that deals with what happens around the NPBPS period with the fiscal framework and with DORA. So the first subsection here deals with what the portfolio committees will undertake prior to the introduction of the national budget. And the proposal to take account of what the committee said yesterday, is to start the clause with the oversight committees of the National Assembly must annually assess the performance of each national department, making use of, amongst other, and then the list of documents that we talked about yesterday, the medium-term estimate of expenditure of each national department, its strategic priorities and measurable objectives as tabled in Parliament with a national budget. And that is what is in the PFMA around what you will get in the national budget. Just to note that the definition of the national budget in the PFMA doesn't actually ask for estimates of expenditure and revenue by main division in a vote and of a vote over the medium term. The only medium term estimates that's requested in the PFMA is a framework of expenditure. So if we say the medium term estimate of expenditure of each national department, you are actually building an extra bit of a legal framework for the NPEF that's not currently in place. The prevailing departmental strategic plan, the Section 32 expenditure reports in terms of the PFMA, the financial statements and annual report for each department. And I would suppose here that if you would need to talk about each department entity and institution, not only each department. The Standing Committee on Public Accounts reports on a department, etc., and any other information requested by or presented to Parliament. So that's a proposal for a first clause in that section. The second clause then deals with the annually prepare the budgetary review and recommendation reports. So the oversight committees, here, I think technically an oversight should come out because it prefers it should just be other committees because we've already defined other committees in the definitions. So apologies for that. It should just, or everywhere it should be other committees. The other committees of Parliament.
Sorry, anywhere where it says oversight committee.
Because we've already defined other committees. The other committees of Parliament must annually prepare budgetary review and recommendation reports to be tabled in the National Assembly, which these reports must provide an assessment of the department's service delivery performance given available resources, must provide an assessment on the effectiveness and efficiency of the department's use and forward allocation of available resources, may include recommendation on the forward use of resources. Then such budgetary review and annual reports, and then there's a requirement that committees must table two annually. One after the tabling of the national budget, and I'm not quite sure how to phrase this, but prior to what's currently that budget vote session in Parliament. So they must table that report then, which they currently do. So it's a report that already exists. And the second one is after the adoption of the main appropriation bill and prior to the tabling of the NCBPS, which is the one that they currently already do related to the annual report. And then clause 4 says additional budget review and recommendation reports may be tabled at the Oversight Committee's discretion. And then a report, both these reports must be referred to the Minister after its adoption by the National Assembly. And then for the second part of that whole section on what happens prior is the discussion around the NCBPS, and I didn't note any changes in the wording of that section. Changes to the current Section 7, and this is the section that discusses the sort of the overall upfront section on the tabling of the national budget. The only changes here is that in each of the type of documents that the committee has requested, I've just added to indicate that it is for the medium term and where applicable for the long term. Mostly it's for the financial year and the next 2 years, except for the key macro assumptions, which we want over the short, medium and long term. Parliament wants over the short, medium and long term. And of course, the estimate and breakdown of contingent liabilities, because that might impact on your long-term debt situation. Changes to the current Section 8, which is the adoption of the fiscal framework. There are two small, the one change is yesterday we had a formulation that made it explicit that the House can adopt, reject or amend any resolution, and the proposal was to change that to make consider reports referred to in C4 adoption, which implicitly still means that the House can reject or amend it, but you don't make it explicit in the legislation. And then the request around including a process for when the National Assembly passes the fiscal framework, but the NCOP passes a different one, just to bring that in line with the Section 75 Bill. And it is rather roughly drafted, I'm sure. In order for it to be a bill, it should look a bit different. Right. Changes to Section 9. The main change there is the change of Clause 1 to strongly reflect, or to reflect, that there must be a separate process around the adoption of DORA for the National Assembly Appropriations Committee and the NCOP, or the National Assembly and the NCOP. And there's two proposals for it. One is just to keep the clause as it is, but insert the word respected, so it could be referred to, and I think that might have fallen out on your draft, but it should read, the Division of Revenue Bill must be referred to their respective committees, to their respective Committee on Appropriations by the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces after the adoption of the fiscal framework. The second option sets it out in two clauses that makes the sequencing clear. The Division of Revenue Bill must be referred to the National Assembly Committee on Appropriation after adoption of the fiscal framework, and then a second clause, after the adoption of the Division of Revenue Bill by the National Assembly, the Division of Revenue Bill must be referred to the National Council of Provinces Committee on Appropriations. I'm sure legally there, of course, you can't refer it directly to that committee, so frankly we need to do some alterations.
Okay, let's have a quick discussion on this, on the two options, so that we can clarify ourselves whether we take one of the options or refuse the two or whatever. But I mean, my view is that option two is much clearer. I don't know. Members?
Right. Chairperson, I absolutely agree with you on that. I just want to make sure on that option two, the second paragraph. Do we refer the whole Division of Revenue Bill to the National Council of Provinces, or only that is applicable in terms of provincial structures? So in other words, is it the 75 and 76, or?
It's the 76 Bill, so the whole Division
of Revenue Bill. I just want to have I was not in the discussions yesterday, but it seems that the intention of, or the result of yesterday's discussions is now that the Division of Revenue Bill must be introduced in the National Assembly. And let's just think a bit about that, because it is a 76 Bill, so constitutionally it can be introduced in the NCOP. And to amend the constitution indirectly with a piece of legislation is not going to hold water in some areas.
What is the current situation?
The current situation is introduced in the NCOP, and it's not introduced by the minister, because the minister is not a member or a committee of the NCOP. Only a member or a committee of the NCOP can introduce something in the NCOP. So you'll get an introduction on behalf of the minister by a committee or by a member. That's usually how it's
Chair, as far as I recall, the current procedure is introduced first. In the NA. How it's introduced in the NCOP, I don't know. But it in the NCOP becomes the second stage after it was introduced in the NA.
That's how it started. Because normally, like, you know, one of the concerns that I remember in our discussions, I think yesterday in Slogan, was saying, even though it's introduced in the NA, what happens when it comes to the Committee on Finance? And, you know, the normal practice is that the parents just adopt a very, you know, quick glance at it and we refer it to the NCOP, and that's where extensive work takes place. But the normal practice is introduced in the NA, refers to the Portfolio Committee on Finance, and then it goes through. So it is the notion of these things. I would imagine what the Constitution would say, it can be introduced in the NCOP, but the normal practice will introduce it.
My apologies to the committee. The constitution actually actually says it must be considered in terms of the procedure set out in 6.1, which is introduction in the NA and then to the NCP. It's actually specific on that.
Okay.
My apologies, sir.
Okay. So we are one on this one. It's introduced in the NA and then so let's look at the option now. We say we go with option 2. If we go with option 2, let's just say so in one. Okay, it's option 2.
The other two changes in this section is technical changes that the committee requested. The one is to consistently refer to any other member of cabinet or any member of cabinet and instead of other ministers, and to allow for provinces and local governments instead of local governments and municipalities. The next section has got the drafting in the next section attempts to capture the discussion yesterday around the different roles of portfolio committee and the appropriation committee. So the first clause, as requested, reads that after the adoption of the fiscal framework, the appropriation bill must be referred to the Committee on Appropriations of the National Assembly. The estimates of national expenditure chapter, we can either call it that or again refer to it as the forward estimate, the strategic priorities and the measurable objectives, which is a description of what is in the estimate of national expenditure chapter. But that chapter and the prevailing strategic plan for each department, entity or institution must be referred to the other committees as established in the rules of Parliament. And optional, what the committee can include there is to undertake the assessment in 6.1, and 6.1 is where we set out the performance assessment of the department, to make the link back so that that process that's referred to in 6.1 that must now occur around the adoption of the appropriation bill. After the appropriation bill has been referred to the National Council of Provinces, the bill must be referred to the Appropriations Committee of the Council. There's a note there that inquires whether the committee would want the select committees in the National Council of Provinces to engage with the appropriations bill in a similar way. My understanding is that currently that does not occur. Currently it's only the appropriate or the select committee on finance that looks at the, it doesn't actually go to the sector select committees, in which case something in the direction of clause 2 would be sufficient. The next thing is the appropriation committee may not, that's the request to make clear the sequencing, that the no amendments may be passed all of that before the DORA has been passed. Then the more significant changes occurs what is now clause 6 or sub clause 6. A is still the same as yesterday, so the appropriations committee, the rules must provide for the appropriation committee to consolidate comments on an amendment of the appropriation bill and prepare a report to the relevant house. And B is still the same, it must require to hold public hearings. But C then changes to read, the rules must provide for other committees to consult with the appropriations committee on amendments to recurrent and capital expenditure to other votes or remain division within a vote, which is the language of the PFMA. In view of their assessment of a department, entity or institution's performance in 6.1. So what this clause proposes is that amendment must be proposed in terms of the assessment of performance. So in a way it limits amendments to be motivated in terms of the committee's work around the department's performance. Then in a shaded area, there's a note to say that if the committee, when looking at amendment powers and the nature of amendment powers this morning, want to continue on the thought of yesterday, that portfolio committees may also recommend, for example, that expenditure is put in reserve or withheld from a department or institution or an entity. This would be the place in the current structure that the committee is considering where such a power can be formulated. D is still the same as yesterday. The Appropriations Committee mediates between the committees on proposing amendments to the Appropriation Bill. And then C is different. It's no longer authorised to reject other committees' amendments, but empower the Appropriation to recommend to the House that proposed amendments by other committees are rejected where those amendments are inconsistent with the fiscal framework, the adopted Division of Revenue Bill, and then the committee can perhaps think around the phrasing for that last section. Currently it says are not motivated adequately in terms of, I'm sorry, it should be eight below, with other words that the report that is provided to the Appropriations Committee that motivates for amendment does not follow the requirements or doesn't fulfill the requirements as set out then in eight. That can also then again refer to if it's or not motivated adequately in terms of 6.1, which is the performance assessment. Well, no, it would be looking at the performance assessment and the requirements for the report. That's an area of discussion. The next clause is the standard one in terms of this bill, which says that the minister or any member of cabinet affected by the proposed amendments must be given at least 10 days to respond to any amendments proposed to the bill by the Committee on Appropriations prior to reporting to the House. And then in Clause 8, as the Committee requested yesterday, we've drafted a set of possible requirements for the report. It starts saying a report of an Appropriations Committee to the House that proposes amendments to the main appropriation bill must, for every amendment, set out the reason for the proposed amendment, demonstrate how the amendment takes into account the broad strategic priorities and allocations of the relevant budget, and that clause, in a way, limits amendments to stay within the policy set out by the executive. So if a committee wants to propose an amendment, it has to demonstrate how that amendment will better fulfill the broad priorities of the budget or the strategic or the allocations of the relevant budget. And of course, if the Appropriations Committee wants to propose one of those macro amendments that says money should move from defence to education, it also needs to be motivated in terms of the broad strategic priorities of the budget. Demonstrate the implications of each proposed amendment for an effective vote in the main division without vote. Demonstrate it for how that amendment would apply to the balance between capital spending, recurrent spending and transfers. Set out the impact of any proposed amendment on service delivery. And then previously in the bill, we had a list of the bill had a list of documents that the amendment must refer to. Many of those documents have already been taken care of or already mentioned elsewhere in the bill. For example, the assessment of the committees needs to take place in terms of certain documents. The Financial and Fiscal Commission does need to be consulted. We are requesting that the fiscal responsibility clause plus the process of the bill set out that it needs to be in line with the fiscal framework. So if then captures the documents or reiterates the important documents for amendments to the national budget or to the main appropriation bill, And that's the Providing Strategic Plans, COPA report, Section 32 report, annual reports, and any other information submitted to a housing committee in terms of standing rule or on request. And then the final one is just the report must be accompanied by responses of the minister or any affected member. So that's the proposal for capturing the discussions of yesterday. And that's the changes to the draft we had yesterday, taking into account it or on the basis of yesterday's discussion.
Okay. Can I have a discussion on this area? Ms. Fobbs, Mr. Singh, are there any other heads? Ms. Fobbs?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, some of my questions are requesting an explanation rather than to enter into the discussion. And one of them is, let me just get this, 10, subclause 2, I think, no, sorry, subclause 1B, where the reference, in brackets, we have the word optional. I'm not exactly sure what's optional, and it will enable us to go further on that once we know. The other issue is on the following page 6. I suppose that would be subclause 6C. The reference there to recurrent and capital expenditure. What about transfers and other forms of expenditure? Are they necessarily capital and recurrent? I don't think so, and we may need to just explore that one. The other thing which is cutting across all of the areas we've been speaking about is just a clarification on what we mean by a member of cabinet. My immediate reaction was this was the deputy minister, but of course we may be referring to someone else as a member of cabinet. If it indeed was reference to the deputy minister, who's not an executive member, of course, would the executive, would the deputy minister not in any event, if there was an area that was needed to be changed or consulted upon, not do so first with the minister anyway? So I just need a clarification first on who is this member of cabinet, and then as it relates to the deputy minister. And a final point on this is the point made by our consultant, a colleague and researcher and so on, and that is the point on the documents before the House. And I think the reference to the fact that this would include the fiscal framework, which in a sense would no longer be a document per se, wouldn't it be something that has already been passed, a resolution or whatever, rather than simply a document for purposes of information. In other words, it would assume a greater significance than the rest of these documents.
Let's deal with the question with questions raised by Ms. Fox first, so that we can do justice.
Thank you, Chair. The optional in that 10.1b referred to undertake the assessment in 6.1. You can either just leave it as refer to the relevant other committees as established in the rules of Parliament, or you can tie them to, or you can tie it to the earlier. That's the optional. Yes, indeed, it should refer to capital, recurrent, and transferring. Because transfers are clearly either capital or recurrent, but in the GFA system they classify separately. And then the ministers in the draft, the full draft yesterday, I think ministers are actually, did we define it? No. So we would need to define it as referring to the other ministers that the changes to the main appropriation bill would affect. So maybe the Minister of Education or the Minister of Health. Or
Maybe let's be clear then, whether we refer to them as any member of cabinet or member of the executive. So,
Chair, I've left out the fiscal framework. There is a clause in the draft that we considered yesterday that makes clear that the fiscal framework will be adopted by a resolution.
Can we clarify the issue of the member of cabinet and member of the executive?
Thank you, Chair. Deputy ministers are not members of cabinet. And the constitution says that the executive authority is exercised by the president in consultation, or how does it say? The president exercises executive authority together with the other members of cabinet. But then it goes further and says the president may appoint any number and dismiss deputy ministers. You know, if someone asks me, is a deputy minister a member of the executive, I would without a doubt say yes. But they do not form part of that constitutional, they don't have that original constitutional authority given to ministers. So I would just leave it with ministers or members of cabinet. Members of cabinet or a member of cabinet. If we're talking about this report must be referred to a member of cabinet, I think one gets close to the role of the deputy minister, as I understand, well, from the constitutional perspective, is the president appoints them and may dismiss them, and there's certain requirements about who he may appoint and how many members that's not in the National Assembly may be appointed and so on. That's sort of an internal thing that the executive must deal with. If they want to let a deputy minister respond to a report, there's nothing Parliament can do to stop it. If the minister's signature is on that report or on the response, that's that. And I think it's the way I understand the executive in any case is that you will get a deputy minister that really does all the trench work, foot soldier, and the minister is in charge of.
But I want, you know, for purposes of this legislation, I would actually want us to be very clear who we are, if anyone.
Yeah.
If we're referring to the ultimate responsibility to rest with the minister, I think we must just say so.
Chair, should we change that to read a report in terms of it must be accompanied by the responses of the minister or any affected minister of cabinet instead of saying member of cabinet?
I'm just asking, hasn't it happened in the past that I wouldn't call it not a very important portfolio gets assigned to a deputy minister and not a minister, hypothetically? I mean, can that happen? You know, so in other words, then you will have a deputy minister responsible for that subsection or whatever the case may be. So if you refer to a member of cabinet, then at least, you know, maybe that will encompass all of that for that possible occurrence. Because otherwise we are now restricting.
What is our intention? To want the responsibility to rest with the minister? That's what we want. I think we must be explicit. Member of the executive.
Yeah.
Which would then exclude the dependents.
No, I'm sorry about it, but it did seem as if parliamentary legal advisor was under the impression, legally speaking, that is, that the executive included the deputy minister, and I'm wondering how many of these lawyers are thinking that. You know, because we ought to just, of course, ensure that the legal advisors
In practice, members of parliament don't agree. If any responsibility is assigned to the minister, we know even if the deputy minister is allowed in the house, it would actually be the other member of the executive.
Yeah.
Even who is not in that department, who would do that? Not the deputy minister.
The minister don't act. The minister. The deputy minister don't act. The minister.
It's a face worse than
Let's not get into that. I think what we want here, if we want this, I mean, to be the responsibility of the minister, let's refer to it as the member of the executive. Are you okay? Yes.
I'm actually not okay.
Legally,
I want you to be okay. I don't want to interact into the debate on it. I just want to give my view from the Constitution. And the deputy ministers have a role in the Constitution. And I find that if one talks about an executive or a member of the executive, we don't have that definition. We don't have that term in the Constitution. We have executive authority, and who exercises executive authority. That's what I said. And then I also said that the cabinet consists of the president, who's the head, the deputy president, and the ministers. So if one wants to get a response from a minister, one can refer to it as a member of cabinet. That will exclude deputy ministers. The way I also understand it, just to get back to another question, was it appears that the president cannot give a portfolio to a deputy minister. Doesn't look like that. The Constitution says the president must select, the deputy president may select any number of ministers to assign functions to them. And so he assigns the functions to the ministers and will appoint the deputy minister to assist that minister. So that's where it comes from.
Okay,
just to clarify that. Thank you.
Yeah, just on this point, I have something else. You see, it says the cabinet consists, if we want to change the president's vote, vote one, the appropriations committee makes recommendations to change the president, and we say we can only change the ministers. It should be actually the cabinet, because the president is a member of cabinet. He heads cabinet. Because it's, then we can change the president's vote. I mean, the appropriations committee can change the president's vote and any minister's vote, or if deputy ministers are given power in the future. And I understand that there's some debate about that, but that's for the future. So, a member of the cabinet.
Don't divulge what you know, if you don't know. Okay, but so we agree that we leave it as member of cabinet. And if I have to do that, then I had Mr. Singh, Mr. Murray, and Ms. Holman. Mr. Singh.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, just another few points. See, in this 10-year, it seems like in every section or subsection, we talk about the Appropriations Committee. Then in the next one, we talk about the Committee on Appropriations. Then we go back to the Appropriations Committee. Then we go back to the Committee on Appropriation. Now we must decide, I think, what we want to call it. A Committee on Appropriation or the Appropriations Committee or whatever. So that's one point. Secondly is on number 6C. Consult with the Appropriations Committee on amendments or the current that of a vote or a main division within a vote. I think in view might not be the right thing. It should be after their assessment, not in view of their assessment, after, insisting that it would, after their assessment of the department. So, 6C, 10, subsection 6, and then sub C.
Okay.
And then that's 6CA, and then 6CB. I mean, where Alta has referred to, example, the committee may recommend National Treasury withhold expenditure or some other instrument. Doesn't the Constitution, isn't there a provision in the Constitution for that, where even a department can be taken over by National Treasury? So shouldn't we bring in that constitutional provision there? Or even a province can be taken over in terms of Section 101A by national government.
Okay, first let's find consistency on the Committee on Appropriations or Appropriations Committee. Advocate Jenkins.
Well, just for consistency's sake, when we look at the terms used to refer to other committees, it's usually Committee on Public Accounts, Committee on the Order of the General, etc. And then we get all the portfolios. I would go with Committee on Appropriations and Committee on Expenditure or Finance.
Okay, so I refer to it as the Committee on Appropriations, and we just need to look at all the sections that are pertinent, that we are consistent. And then the other one that touched on that Mr. Singh raised is the issue on 10.6, what is this? C, in view of their assessment. Can you speak some English to that? I told you, English is my 11th language. My first is Zulu. So can we deal with that? Thank you.
In relation to the
See, that's the problem now. In English, in view of, in relation to, as a consequence, say something we don't understand now. What do we mean?
I think the choice there for the committee is to say it must, if you, after the assessment, is a slightly weaker formulation because it just means a sequence of events. So they first do the assessment and then they have to make the amendment. If you have as a consequence of or in view of or something in that direction, it's a stronger formulation which says that the amendment must be in terms of.
Yes.
So they can only amend on account of the performance assessment that they have.
But
it's a way of circumscribing.
Mr. Singh is also Zulu like me. So
yeah.
We then agreed that there is nothing wrong with the within a vote in view of the assessment. Can we clean that up? Because it's as strong as it was. Mr. Singh?
The other thing is on amendments now can they consult with the Appropriations Committee on amendments? Are we not, or is it proposed amendments or recommended amendments? Because at that stage it still be proposed amendments. The portfolio committee will come to the appropriations committee with proposed amendments. It's not, they haven't amended any, they can't amend, they don't have the power to amend. It'll be on their proposed amendments to recurrent and capital, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me?
Yeah.
Proposed amendments. Yeah. But shy some is. Okay, are we agreed? Okay. I just wanted, Ms. Hogan, is it on these issues raised by Ms. Yeah, on these issues, Ms. Hogan?
I've got other comments, but on this particular one, I'm just worrying about this word consult. Provide for oversight committees to consult with the Appropriations Committee. I would say that it recommends to the Appropriations Committee proposed amendments. Because consult, you know, who has the final say there? It appears that the Oversight Committee has the final say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm also worried just about leaving with inadvertent view of the assessment of the department, entity, or institution's performance. But that certainly is something that we want the amendments to be linked to. But what about allocation of strategic priorities? You know, a department might be saying our strategic priority is to paint every house white. And you might be saying, no, but your strategic priority is to dig sewage pipes. I'm just frivolous, but what I'm saying is it just can't be based purely, because, the powers to amend as Advocate Jenkins or Mr. Jenkins or whatever Mr. Jenkins wants to do. And he says us very wisely, is he saying, we're putting in a lot of procedural steps here. And anyone could go to a court. And if we're just limiting a proposal and amendments to priority, to performance, we're not talking about allocation efficiency. Or allocation strategic.
Can we perhaps just go back to 6.1 and check whether we made anything we really need to use that last. 6.1 talks to this committee of the National Assembly must annually assess the financial
performance.
On this document is the second page.
Okay.
Thank you.
these are the things that we say must be taken into account. The medium term estimated level of expenditure, the national departments, the strategic priorities, the measures and objectives, the state which is parliament and national budget, and the prevailing departmental strategic plans, and doesn't that cover the strategic priorities?
That's the amendments, the amendments only then refer, the amending powers only refer to the measurable objectives or performance delivery.
Yeah.
It says here that you can recommend an amendment on recurrent transfer and capital expenditure and amount is innovative in view of the assessment of the department or institution's performance.
Okay.
Or strategic priorities.
My concern here would be is the fine line between, in terms of the declaration of powers, would be straying into the policy making powers of the executive via the parliament. I agree that there may be times when you do want to look at sort of lower level strategic priorities in terms of government overall strategic priorities, but how to formulate it, I think, is a fine line that we would need to tread. One option is perhaps in that 6.1, if one refer there to the financial and policy performance of each national department. Which means it's not only the financial performance, but it's also performance in terms of...
Oh, I was trying to
Because it's linked, it's another point I wanted to make that's linked to this, and it's related to the 6.1 that I was just raising here.
Okay.
Because it says, other committees of the National Assembly must annually assess the financial and policy performance. Now, it's not policy performance because, you know, you can have a myriad of policies. And produce that, and change your policies. It's your performance against strategic objectives. It's your measurable outputs against strategic objectives. It's only says the financial and service delivery performance. You can say it that way. If you want to. Or performance against budget.
Performance. Why don't we just call it
annually assess the performance of each national department.
Well,
we
agreed to just refer to performance, not the policy. Financial and performance of each national department.
Yeah.
Just
say performance, but annually assess the performance of each national department. Then you can decide which aspect of performance can be budget against actuals against budget, it could be strategic, or it could be planning against your strategic plan.
Does that then also now address the issue you had raised earlier?
Yes.
On
in view of their performance, view of the performance of the department. Because then it allows you the possibility of raising a question of strategic priorities. Because if a department is not addressing what everyone regards as a priority, if the police service isn't being able to bring down crime, that is a strategic priority and they're not performing. So it allows you that broader range.
Okay. I had the hands of, I think Randy writes that he deletes some of the names before we speak. We'll come after Mr. Mare and then it's all good. It's all good. Have you exhausted your bit? Because
there is other stuff that can continue.
Okay, you'll come after Mr. Swartz. He's causing problems. The nice people's names that before I know he's deleted. Okay, Mr.
So Chair, mine is also just on 6CB, which I think one must just discuss. Mr. Singles also referred to that. And I just want to know what is, is there any substance in recommending? In other words, you know, does it have any carry any weight? In other words, if you recommend to National Treasury to it with a whole expenditure, are they obliged to do that, or can they ignore that? So in other words, it's still up to them whether they want to do that. Now, obviously, you know, from if that is the case, then from a moral point of view, you can probably keep it in there to recommend to them. But then you still sit with the problem if they refuse to do that, then you can say so what. So one must really look at that objectively as well.
I see some hands coming up. I mean, is it on the point that Mr. Murray is raising? Mr. Blood of the Sims.
I agree with what Mr. Murray is saying, but I also want to go further to say, I think maybe it would be important to define it, I don't know, how, under which circumstances you want to have the power to ask National Treasury to withhold the money. If it's according, it's in relation to what we said yesterday, then you must refer to the Constitution.
Okay. So what they're saying is that the committee could recommend the invoking of Section 216, whatever.
Yeah, just on that, and that is why earlier I referred to proposed. Even in 6A, we're going to have all these amendments, even consolidated by the Appropriations Committee and put into a report, would be proposed amendments, and the House injunction will force a department or a National Treasury, wherever. It's the House which would eventually decide. It's not the Appropriations Committee. The Appropriation Committee takes it to the House, and the House, which is of House of Parliament, will say, we accept this particular recommendation that's come through in the report from the Appropriations Committee after the necessary consultation. And then they're obliged to.
That's okay.
Just in relation to this last point, there I need assistance from our legal advisors here. When a committee amends a bill, is it called proposed amendments, or is the committee, is it amendments to the bill? You know, when Peacock amends a bill, it goes as amendments to the House. It's not a proposed amendments to the House. It goes as amendments, and you vote on the amendments.
Because
you see, what's very absent from this bill is the procedures in the House, and that's a whole thing that we still need to look at. Because if we go, if the thing is saying that the committee doesn't actually amend anything, and that it goes with a report to the House to propose amendments, and then the House would debate those amendments within the House, and then we'd vote on each amendment. Whereas if, now I really need advice from the table staff or whatever, whereas if you go with an amendment, which is your power to do, then the House would simply vote on those amendments. Or is it one and the same thing?
Let's get some legal minds, and if we don't get satisfaction, I would imagine we would have to refer the question to the table staff. It's a pity we don't have one sitting through here.
Thank you, Chair. Let me take the first one, the Treasury control issues, stopping of funds. I think it's important just to point out that one obviously reads this, and the intention was what I'm getting from this committee now. You must read that in light of Chapter 3 of the Constitution, which says that organs of state shouldn't interfere in the area of competence of another organ of state. Now, Sub 2, 216.2 of the Constitution says the National Treasury must enforce compliance with the measures envisaged in subsection 1. Now, those are the measures set out in the PFMA and the Municipal Finance Management Act, roughly, and the Treasury regulations. The and then may stop the transfer of funds if the organ of state commits a series of persistent material breach of this one. So there's a discretion to the National Treasury. Now, if we want to make a recommendation to the National Treasury, one must read it in that light, and it certainly we cannot, the way the Constitution is written at this point in time, we cannot force the Treasury to exercise. What we can do is we can recommend to the Treasury to consider whether there is a persistent breach, because the Treasury is in control of its function. And the Treasury can then either take action or not, bearing in mind that the Treasury is responsible for the implementation of the TFMA. So when one exercises oversight over the Treasury, and there's been disaster in one or two departments, the Parliament has made a recommendation to the Treasury to consider whether it should look at its powers in terms of the Constitution, and nothing has happened, one can ask the Treasury whether they take their responsibility seriously. But more than that, one cannot do. I can compare it to the issue about the SABC board, which Parliament is still struggling with. Parliament cannot dismiss those members or have a vote of no confidence in them. When a vote of no confidence and a recommendation, there is a difference. But the difference actually comes in if there's power to that vote of no confidence. So when Parliament wanted to, well, I'm not involved with the Communications Committee, for Parliament and Communications, but when they wanted to take a vote of no confidence, and it would have created a certain impression, that is what the danger was. So we wanted to say, before you do that, you must have that in law. So it's a bit similar here. So we cannot force the Treasury, but we certainly can think of a word to say to the Treasury, look at Section 216. And it just came to mind, I mean, Parliament is responsible for the implementation of legislation, including the Constitution. That's oversight. So I can say to the Treasury, based on that function of Parliament, do you think you should implement this provision? It's within your domain. And we will see how you have implemented and what the consequences of that was. So that's the angle I would think in terms of drafting. That's the one part. The other part...
Okay, can I, sorry, I see that I can't speak on this one, but I'll go to the other factors. I'm not done that. Yeah, I agree with you. But the other issue, I mean, which is more of a bigger issue, which we need to consider, I thought about it yesterday, whether we fully comprehend what 216 is all about, and whether 216(1) of the Constitution, whether we comprehend what it's all about, and whether it will serve the purpose that we wanted to serve, as we discussed yesterday. Because this one is, if there are any persistent breach of general corporate accounting practice, uniform expenditure child classifications, uniform treasury norms and standards, full stop. And our concerns yesterday, I think they went broad beyond that. So I think we need to come back and say that it addresses those issues, because these are more narrow.
Just to add to Advocate Jenkins, of course you're also asking the Minister, when he brings the budget in February, to respond to the report submitted in terms of that section. So there's another opportunity where the Minister actually has to report back to say how he's implemented such a recommendation by the committee. And just as a point of practice, in terms of the Treasury regulations, you probably can get any department on a number of Treasury regulations at any point in time. So it looks like quite a narrow scope for the Treasury to act, but on a strong recommendation from Parliament, there would be a scope within the Treasury regulations to act. And if you think about all the consistent scope and qualified opinion on the same reason for a department year after year after year.
Okay. Yes, Hogan. Ms. Hogan, and then Chair, I think the point that I'm trying to raise is, if you look at these provisions of the Constitution, I mean, for me, they are too narrow. And the point that you were saying yesterday was that, for example, a department wants to spend money and realize the systems are not in place. And these provisions of 216 have nothing to do with this.
They're very clear as to what they have to pay the director.
You see, that's my problem. That's why I'm saying it goes broader than what you say. Because here it's about classifications, uniform treasury norms and standards. I've misplaced my section. Generally recognized counterparties, uniform expenditure classification, uniform treasury norms and standards. That's and it doesn't address what we said yesterday. Here the department, correctional service, said it will bring build all prisons since 8 years. It's on record. I'm not raising what is not on record. It's on record. That we discussed this thing in the adjustment appropriation. And the money has been rolled over every year. And the question is, can Parliament, that minister, say no, with all the money, it can't just be rolled over every year? But it's not this classification.
Okay. We'll park the invoking of two lessons.
Can we, as we look at 200, I think we agree that would be one of the recommendations that a committee could probably make, that an appropriations committee could make, which would strengthen Treasury's hands. The issue that Ms. Malotto is raising is what power the lending powers of Parliament actually have, not just asking the Treasury, but what Parliament is doing. And rather in the context, as you remember, of the issue of a qualified freeze, which is what the Germans use, that you freeze spending on a particular project pending certain investigations or something like that. So when things are going really haywire, like the hospital revitalization process, freeze for 3 months until the portfolio committee on health seems to report on what is actually stopping this from going ahead. You know, something along those lines. So you're making strong statements. But I would suggest that maybe we look at those kinds of powers when at some stage that we want to look at what are effective powers to recommend that Parliament would want to use.
Let's then take that to the end of the process, as we have indicated, that the issue of the actual powers, we will look at them and then pack this invoking of 216 at the moment, because it will then be part of that discussion. Okay. I have Mr. Swart. Okay. I have Mr. Singh. Mr. Singh, are you... Okay. You know what Bradley has just done now, because I accused him of cynicism. He's just back on the list again.
Just to follow on Ms. Holden, the thing that you just
said. If it's on the power, let's deal with it when we're really dealing with the actual powers. Okay, Ms. Pumps. Ms. Pumps.
Right now.
Yes.
Thank you, Chairman. I just thought I was on the list somewhere.
Yeah. I'm reading the list.
Right. Jefferson, I had wanted to make a point earlier on to do on the policy and the prioritisation. It was to do with the point Ms. Hogan had raised there about line, what about if certain priorities and the line functions are not adequately funded issue. And then the issue of policy came up as well. And then we got some valuable information from either our legal advisor or the consultant here that it may be we should not enter into, we should have higher regard for the separation of powers issue when it comes to policy. But my question then would have been, when you prioritize, it is tightly linked to policy and the allocation of funds. Because you prioritise key policy. And I thought we would have had just a discussion on that area, but we already resolved it probably in the manner in which I would have liked to have seen, so I'll leave that one. And then when we come to point 8, Chairperson, a reference to a report of an appropriation committee, which I think we're going to call the Committee of Appropriations, there's a word here which says must. We must, for every one of the amendments, there must be a set of these reasons given. My only concern there is that how are we going to get this information? I mean, it's actually very substantive information we're looking for. And how are we going to get this information, given that Treasury can't with its huge number of people? Now, we're going to set up a very good budget office, I accept that. But we may need to just look at this, because if we put the word must, there may be a problem in being able to source all of the information which we would preferably like to have. So it's a caution I'm raising here, Chair. Let's not set ourselves up for failure the first time round. The second thing, Chair, is to go back to the point I earlier made about Cabinet and Minister. I agreed with your decision, Chair, you know, the ruling, but the problem was the point on 9, where we seem to be actually dividing the two up, which we hadn't in previous occasions. On previous occasions, we said Member of Cabinet. Here we seem to have two different bodies, and I'm not sure what it was referring to. It says of the Minister or an affected, whereas in the past we simply said a Member of Cabinet. So if we could just get a clarification on that particular one. And my last point, Chair, does go back to the points made earlier. I think it is on 6. It's actually subclause. It's 10.6E. Now, I wasn't here, Chairperson, and we may have discussed this particular point, so please rule me out if we have. It is the whole issue of the empowering of the appropriation of committee, etc., and then the adoption of the adopted division of revenue bill or not motivated adequately. It is the term adequately in that respect of the empowering the appropriation committee to recommend. The House must empower the appropriation committee. Could I just be given an understanding as to what we mean there? Do we mean training capacitation or authority, or what do we actually mean there?
When you were responding with regards to the issue of invoking 216, there's something else that you need to come up with. Let's first finalize the 216. What can we do?
Yes, Chair, that is actually goes to the wording of proposed amendments. Who proposes amendments? Who amends the bill, the committee or the House?
Do you want to respond
to
that? Do you want to respond to that? Could you, and if the committee is unable to give a response, then perhaps you would also have to. Perhaps you would also have to involve the table staff. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. The Constitution uses the word amend and propose amendments, but in the sense of what the Houses do. In terms of 75 legislation, the NA may amend the bill and send it to the NCOP. The NCOP then may propose amendments and send it back. Those proposed amendments may be accepted or rejected by the National Assembly. There's some further detail to that, which is not too important right now. When you come to 76 legislation, the Constitution talks about the NCOP there may amend the bill as well, of course. So when we're talking about committees, as an extension of the House, I would recommend that we use report amendments to the House, because that's what a committee does. It reports amendments to the House in terms of Parliament's own language that it uses in the ATC and so on. So I would look
at amendments are done by the committee and reported.
They report it to the House, and the House will then either adopt that report, in which in effect has the result of then amending the legislation when that report is adopted.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ms. Hogan, on this one.
Yes, I prefer that formulation because I think it would be an unfortunate thing if an Appropriations Committee recommends the House to reject an amendment of another committee. You know, it's just untidy that the debate must be between the Appropriations Committee and the Portfolio Committee. And the Appropriations Committee has the last view, but there must be a debate there. You can't just sort of just go to the House and say reject what Health is saying. You know, I mean, it's inelegant.
Okay.
But then it brings us to the crunch. There's a lot of things here now, and that's the procedures in the house around this, because we have this terrible procedure where ministers stand up and defend their budgets, all the questions, all of this, an adjustments procedure, all those procedures in the house which we have in the rules. And I think we just need to see what we need to do here, because now the Appropriations Committee is going to come with amendments to the House, and the House is going to vote on those amendments. It's not just going to be having a general vote on appropriations. But we also have debates at the moment on each portfolio committee budget debate. Now, I'm trying to keep a lot of things together, one check, so help me if I just suddenly get stuck and I fall off the wheels fall off. But here at the moment, when we say that the oversight committees must table a budget, what review and recommendations report, we're saying that must be tabled shortly after the NA. After the tabling of the national budget and prior to the National Assembly session on the relevant vote.
Okay.
So now we're saying the portfolio committees have to produce a budget report, like they do now, normally, a report on the budget. And that's going to be tabled prior to the National Assembly session on the relevant vote. Now, that gives the portfolio committee an opportunity to come with their series of amendments and their whole long story. Before the Appropriations Committee has even done that. Okay. So what we need to do is try and sort out, and this is where the complexity comes in, what gets debated in the House? I would suggest that the Appropriations Committee taking amendments is a sensible debate that needs to take place. Because that's the debate which is looking at all of the issues, all the allocations, you're looking at the budget as a whole, not just the separate individual stuff. But you also want separate stuff on, you also want people to be debating the individual votes as well. And the committee's response to those votes, what role does the portfolio committee play in that budget process? My other issue that I'm trying to bring in here is the role of opposition political parties. We haven't looked at the composition of the Appropriations Committee, but it seems like chairs of committees are driving processes very much. The Appropriations Committee must have opposition parties. Often opposition parties come into their own in the debate in the Assembly, where they table a set of amendments. Now, are we opening up the Assembly for further amendments to be tabled? Except not via the appropriations, and in terms of, and maybe we should just park all of this and say we need to sit and with the legal advisors and with the table staff and Alta and all of us here
to look at the process
and just look at
the
engines
house.
Here,
yeah.
and maybe people could just raise issues here, but I don't think we can reach definitive conclusions here. But do you see the gist of just...
Okay.
Ms. Spott. To tackle part of this, but not the whole, because I do think we may need to pass the procedures a bit. But just on the aspect of what other committees would do when they made their report prior to the Committee of Appropriations, as it were. Perhaps many of us know, in countries around the world, regardless of their political position, whether socialist, capitalist, or whatever, you have a position where the portfolio committee, in inverted commas, of respective areas actually focus on the policy aspect
rather than the macro financial aspects and allocations thereof. So there's a, their report, when it goes to their respective parliament, may well talk about the policy priorities and the need for further allocations here or there or whatever, but they don't go beyond that, the question of prioritizing the issue, so that within the appropriation in support of one of these areas, it would refer to that recommendation there in a particular area, I think it was primary health care or something, and then target that for the increased allocation per se. So that it does separate it, and the Appropriations Committee does the report after policy. But it's quite a tricky one, and I'm sure we don't have to be bound by what one may call international practice.
Chair, one of the things that one might look at then is at the moment, committees are obliged in a sense, in terms of our understanding, to report two things. They produce a report on the budget and they produce a report on the annual report. Now, you know, that report on the budget, we all know, is a waste of time. Because, you know, the budget has been set and you all go and you know, we have this 3-hour debate and, you know, and everybody gets very frustrated. And I would want to suggest that if portfolio committees are wanting to influence a budget ahead of time, that the real budget review and recommendation report should come at the time when they're tabling the review of the annual report. Because then they can make statements and say, we would wish to see the department giving us good reasons why this allocation is going this way in this forthcoming budget. Do you know what I mean? So that you're influencing the budget coming in February, already sometimes here in October, November, around the medium-term budget policy statement. And you're also allowing Treasury and the Cabinet Committee on the budget to be aware of the issues that are concerning Parliament, so that the major focus of the portfolio committee's influencing on the budget is at that period of time. Then we have to look at what kind of participation portfolio committee get down to discuss it and having hearings on their particular votes. And the engagement is then between the Appropriations Committee and the Portfolio Committee at certain points. And then we need to look at what happens in the House relating to each committee, and then what happens in the House relating to each political party.
Yeah, Chair, I just wanted to refer to the role of political parties and then coming up and proposing. I'm just looking at the Congressional Budget Office and the way they operate. I mean, it says here, their mandate is to provide Congress with objective, non-partisan, and timely analyses to aid in economic and budgetary decisions on the wide array of programs covered by the federal budget. And then CBO assists the House and Senate budget committees and the Congress more generally by preparing reports and analyses in accordance with the CBO's mandate to provide objective and impartial analysis. CBO's reports contain no policy recommendations. I suppose policy issues will be debated by the Committee on Appropriation, like SCOPA. So, I mean, SCOPA reports generally are debated in the House, but they're agreed to by all political parties as a way forward. So I think here it emphasizes the strength of the budget office, the impartiality and preparing reports, so that there can be a political debate in the Committee on Appropriations, and then that goes to the House. So I won't say it won't leave space for any member of a political party, opposition party, to stand up and say, well, I don't agree. I mean, that's always possible, you can do that. But I think generally there will be an agreement that this committee operates in a non-partisan because based on information that's objective and impartial.
No. Thank you, Kim.
Okay, so
No, I'm just saying, I agree that we should fight with them. It's not really the easy thing, it's mutual contract.
The good thing is, whatever we pack it for ourselves. You know, we mustn't pack it with the view that at some point it's going to disappear.
Because I wanted to implement the policy of my organization, or of my party, and he might implement the equity. So, that's the issue.
Oh, okay. Somebody says that when there's no parking in the basement, we'll go to Hoop Street. Okay, Ms. Mokoto and then Ms. Hogan.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think that we have spoken at length about the amendments that we have to. The amazing power that we need as the legislature. But if you check in the constitution and also check in the PFMA, certain provisions that are being made that relate to the types of interventions that can be made, they have got their own limits. And those limits, we often find them, you know, they only talk about the provinces and the municipalities. But if you go to nationally, there's a vacuum that exists. For instance, if you get people talking about like the departments, like the correctional service, the lack of performance, that is that what is it that we can do in order to remedy the situation? So I think it's one area that we have to look at, and then maybe. Like we have already talked about the narrow-minded approach that has been adopted by the Constitution. It calls for the amendment of the Constitution in some way. For instance, if you look at Section 139, it says that we can intervene in the municipalities if the municipalities fail to fulfill their obligations and they are acting out of the interest or the nation, the local citizens. It will touch on issues of delivery, it will touch on issues of finances, which we have spoken about. I think we have to capture a clause that relates to the national, that at the national level, what is it that we can do if a department is not performing. Those clauses are captured in Section 139, they are captured in Section 100 and 216 of the Constitution. I think the PFMA is also explicit on that. Thanks, Chairperson.
Okay. The sooner we get to this parking lot, the better. Because I see that people really want to get to this powers.
Yeah.
And I would like us to move on so that we can get to the parking lot. So, how are we doing for
Just one small point, just the tabling of documents. It says that the appropriation bill must be tabled before the Appropriations Committee and the Estimates of Expenditure before the Portfolio Committee. I would suggest that everything be tabled before both be referred to all committees, because that appropriation bill is just, you know, one page. And if you can't have, you know, if you're not entitled to deliberate on those estimates of expenditure, then there's no point. Whereas the appropriation bill must also be referred to the portfolio committee.
Okay, so can we? Yeah.
Sure.
To be fair, I'll try to appropriation bill.
as possible.
Just to note that if the committee wants to give, or in the bill, expression to the idea that that one report is actually the main report every year, then that's the only one that should be specified in the bill. But then other reports can be, similar reports can be done on discretion of the committee.
We have a new leader of opposition,
Chair. No, okay. And if you go down without trying to do it, any other.
This is your last floor-cropping opportunity.
And I have a problem with this private issue.
I'm just a bit disappointed because I wanted us to break, but I'm told that caffeine has just been taken away for warming, I think, because earlier than.
Sure.
Yeah, that's it. So that's
proceed. Can I just raise a point about the opposition parties and their role? Obviously, they play their role in portfolio committees. And they try and influence and they propose amendments that can become accepted now, all of those kind of things. In the Appropriations Committee, there would be opportunity for representation on that Appropriations Committee. But, you know, the questions of the leader of the opposition parties and you know, because the budget is actually the flagship of any government. Now, it's traditional in some parliaments where the leader, if you have this concept, which we have here, the leader of the opposition tables a contrary budget, their budget proposals. You know, it's just sort of a statement that we are different. Which is a bit of a waste of time because no one pays attention to it really. But surely when the Appropriations Committee is when the report, which is going to be the composite report, because it can't simply just be a report and we propose these amendments and these, we recommend these amendments or whatever. But it's going to be a comprehensive report which says we have noted this and this, you know, it brings together all what the portfolio committees have been saying and, you know, it will be a pretty, it will be the Parliament statement on the budget that the Appropriation Committee would want adopted. Okay. Isn't that the point in which the opposition parties can table their own views on that appropriation report? You know, isn't it just as simple as that? Not table, but that they respond to that report and say, we agree and we do not agree with this. That it gives just the opposition parties that public moment in which they state what they do and what they do not agree with the Appropriation Committee's response.
I see you mentioned in a situation where we have 13 opposition parties, or 16 or whatever the case may be.
Well, with floor cutting it will be this.
One
man shows
the last opportunity that we will crisscross and create even more difficult by the time. But I don't know. Do we really want to write this into this
legislation? No, we don't want to write it into legislation. We would have to make recommendations in this report on what changes will have to be effectively reduced.
In the rules. Mr. Medlow's hand was up. Who else? Whose hand was up?
I think the matter is, for me, has been settled. We didn't say you don't have to change. It's a matter that has to be dealt by the Rules Committee. Do a recommendation or whatever. And see whether. Because the current practice that they do pronounce, and Mr. Marais has a show before the National Advisor.
And I would imagine he's taking notes. He would actually want to institute a similar budget office, and you know, all the processes we're talking here. Not necessarily. You're still from here. Already. Okay. Let's. You know, we had gone.
Okay, let's wait for tea and then we'll proceed after 10.
With
the other section. I think we're half in there. Second section of the document.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Just the last note on the first section. I have to apologise to the committee. The changes that changes the statement of intent to a budgetary review, etc., reports on the other two, on the DORA and fiscal framework, was in detail, but they will go in from yesterday. Okay. The draft proposals on new sections follows the same pattern for the other types of money balls that we haven't dealt with yet. They are, of course, draft proposals, just to have something on the table for the committee to discuss. The next section then deals with the revenue balls. Now, the proposal here is that all revenue balls, whether they attach to the budget or whether they attach to other legislation that's put in place to raise levies or charges or surcharges or whatever, that all of the revenue money balls will result under this section, and that is why there's a definition for revenue balls that then needs to be included in the definitions. And the definition would say that are balls that impose or abolish national taxes, levies, duties, or surcharges, or which abolish or reduce or grant exemption from taxes, levies, duties, or surcharges. That's the definition of what revenue balls will refer to. So it's all revenue balls, budgetary balls as well as other money balls. There's a note in blue there that looks at the current procedure for revenue balls, and it says that currently what happens, and I think the query is whether this legislation wants to stick to that version and use the process that's currently in place, or whether it wants to change it to a process similar to the others, taking into account that we're dealing with revenue. And the current process, of course, is that the minister puts a draft bill forward. The committee discusses the draft bill, makes recommendations on amendments. The minister redrafts the bill, which takes into account the amendments. The committee again has a chance to provide and to discuss and provide amendments or make amendments. And then the minister goes and drafts the final bill, which is submitted to the House. And the committee then supplies its report, which can either recommend that the bill is passed or rejected, and of course that's the old form of amendment powers that we've had. So that's the current system, the current process for amendment powers. The one that then follows the pattern similar to the appropriations bill and the other money bills that we've discussed. Refers the bill to the National Assembly Committee on Finance. The committee may propose amendments to revenue bills, and then any amendment to the revenue bills must be consistent with the adopted fiscal framework and vision of Revenue Act as passed by Parliament. So this also means that if there are revenue bills that come in the middle of the year, and there's an issue around sequencing and timing there, but that should already have been foreseen by the executive in the fiscal framework, because Parliament is still bound by that fiscal framework, if one keeps on using the word consistent with. But for the taxation bills, it also implies that the ceiling of revenue is fixed. The rules of Parliament must provide for a procedure to amend revenue bills, and this procedure must require the Committee on Finance to hold public hearings on the draft revenue bill. Both and the amendments to the draft revenue bills allow the Committee on Finance to consult with other parliamentary committees, and I'm sure there will be discussion around that, but that also then what my field of interest is, this clause would then apply to revenue bills that's not part of the budgetary bills. So if there's a bill with mining levies or if, and so forth, it would allow, the rules must allow the committee to confer with other committees. Require the committee to prepare a report to the House in terms of subsection 7, and the minister must be given at least 14 days to respond to any amendment proposed. It must be 6 again. Subsection 6, and then the report submitted to the House, and it's just a simple start-up formulation there, but the report must motivate the amendments in terms of Section 4 of this Act, which is the fiscal responsibility clause, be accompanied by the Minister's response to any proposed amendments. Shall I go through all of them, or shall we do them one by one?
Maybe let's deal with them one at a time, and if members have issues to raise, they'll play with them best, and then proceed. Members, pass on the revenue bills. Ms. Hogan, Ms. Fox. Was her hand up, Ms. Hogan?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just perhaps seeking a clarification under 4, there's a reference here in the sub clause A about various public hearings. First of all, do I understand this correctly, that first there will be a set of public hearings on the draft? When that's over and we now have a draft, there's another set of hearings on the amendment. We can just, or is it one set of hearings? Because it's really not very clear.
Thank you, Jane. No, the procedure is okay. Just that on 4, I think where we have rules of parliament, we should say standing rules, yeah, because it's defined early on. So. And I understand you worked at 2 in the morning.
Ms. Hogan, are you still on? Or must we then clarify those? Okay, let's deal with those.
The amendments on public hearings on the draft and on the amendments to the draft, it's up to the committee, but I would think it would be one, so it's just amendments on the draft bill. I think in our earlier formulations we did have on the draft and amendments to the draft on the fiscal framework as well, so probably the committee needs to discuss as to whether it will always only be on the draft that's in front of them, or whether for some of the cases they would be on the amendment as well.
Normally, Chairperson, in terms of the public hearing, let me rather say, if we have public hearings on the draft, and once more on the amendment, and we legislate, where would it put us in terms of the times and all those kinds of things? I think the norm normally is when we have hearings, public hearings on the draft, then the committee takes its process first. Because if you call once more the people on public hearings on the amendment, then it's another argument. It means that you will continue and not conclude what you are supposed to be concluding. But was raising that chapter in that we shall not have to have so many. That it may be public hearings, I would suggest public hearings on the draft. and then it will be up to the committee, but not put it in legislation that if the committee needs more, if the committee is not happy with the outcome. Thank you. But this I didn't consult
with. That's why I'm content with what you have just said. Is how can I do it now?
It's in a similar vein to what Mr. T is saying. Why are we having hearings on a draft? Why are we not having hearings on a plan? Is that, you see, because we used to have hearings on a draft. Are we now saying that we will have hearings on a bill?
Let's hear the other views and try to take a decision that this committee wants to see that we want. But is that the correct interpretation? Is that what it does?
It should be. It should be.
Thank you, Chairperson. You see, I believe in the past we were given the opportunity of all these hearings on the draft because we didn't have the power to amend the money bill. But now, of course, we are seeking those powers to enact them. Therefore, that concept of a draft bill would fall away. You know, that's how I'm understanding it. And then you have that bill. And it would probably be, as I see it, that the committee would want to deliberate a little on it and hear what the other committees are proposing regarding amendments, and then public hearings are held on that bill and on our proposed amendments, as it were. That's how I read this as a possibility. Obviously, I see many others with other views, Chair, yes.
Sounds very intimidating.
Chairperson, I think we must obtain the issue the way it is as draft bill, because like as we go to public hearing, we'll still factor in comments that will come from the people. Like it shouldn't be something that is already, you know, cooked to go to the, you know, public hearings. It must be something that we take it together with the people, so that we don't pretend to be getting a view whereas we know the final outcome. Thanks, Chair.
Update.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I've consulted with Ms. Rodriguez. I don't know whether we should just leave it to draft, because the amendments will arise out of the public hearing to the draft. And the amendments would be the responsibility of the committee,
yes,
who listen to everybody and then propose the amendments. Now, if we're going to take the draft and then arising out of that, we're going to amend and then take the amendments back to the public. No, we've got to stop at some. So, you know, my view would be we should just require the Committee on Finance to have a public hearing on the draft revenue bills. Full stop.
Let me just say, a bill is already a draft of the kind of legislation.
Oh. Yeah. Now, when both the mics are on, you don't
Okay.
Mr. Singh, were you done? Because I was going to announce Facebook to put your bill.
He has not. I was going to say, after revenue bills, we put a full stop. I mean, delete everything.
Okay. Other views? Let's then engage with this.
Yes, Chairperson, you know, in view of the rather serious consultations which are taking place on my list, it puts me at a slight disadvantage because I haven't consulted my right. But on a more serious note, Chairperson, I think I want to go along with the view that already indicates to us that right now we have a practice in Parliament that is putting other bills on the table. The only reason why the money bills came in draft form was because we never had the power to amend, whereas other bills came to Parliament because
the committees had the power to amend those bills as they stood. So in one sense of the word bill is a draft act, is a draft for the act, which then we look at, because now we have the power to amend, and in one sense it assumes a little bit, becomes closer to other bills, if I can put it that way. And then, as I said, as I understood it, then we'd be given this bill, would be useful for us to have our own slight deliberation as a committee to get an understanding, a briefing, etc. We would then already have had proposals about allocations and priorities from the other portfolio committees. All this would be considered. And we would make proposals on amendments. Then this would be subject to public hearings, and after the public hearings may come further amendments, if you like, that's as I see it, or a qualification of those we have proposed, before we then take that final grouping of amendments and deliberate and move forward. That's how I see the process going, giving everyone, of course, a bite of the cherry.
I agree, and I would suggest that we say for require the Committee on Finance to hold public hearings on the revenue bills, full stop. In other words, we delete the word draft and we delete the words and amendments to the draft.
Okay.
I don't want to go into all the details, but the Constitutional Court requires that Parliament gives effective, gives opportunity for effective public consultations when it does its public hearings, or facilitate public involvement like the Constitution requires. And the letters that we sometimes do get, because we have this Rule 159, which said that the Department must introduce a draft, but that's for the information and for planning purposes of the committee really. There has been hearings on those bills, and then when an organization finds out that that was a draft bill, as I said, or as they say, some of these letters are not for sensitive politicians, they get upset, and they really require that they want to be consulted on the bill, not the draft. That's not so. That's just something to keep in mind. I would really go with the latter suggestion to say that in line with the Constitution, we must have public hearings on the bill. And if you want to do something on the draft, but let's see that.
I call this
appreciate the consensus. Thank you, Chair. We've got two conflicting set of instructions here. The one is to say, if we take out the on the revenue bills and amendments to the revenue bills, if you take out and amendments to the revenue to the revenue bills. And that would probably apply to all the clauses that ask for public hearings. Then the process that you are describing is saying that you have the hearings before any amendments are proposed. If we follow what Ms. Pubb has been saying, then you need to leave that clause in and say that you have your hearings on the bill, and then it would include a first set of amendments to the bill. But then the problem is you actually require hearings on amendments to take place. So it's quite a strong statement.
2 weeks of the book, and we pass it on the amended platform.
Exactly. No, it's not that you have to two hearings.
Yeah.
We have one hearing.
We can if we want
to. Arising out of the hearings, there could be amendments, and that becomes.
Yeah. So
take
out.
Discretionary.
I've got him on my left hand side, but I was trained in the UDF era as a paralegal. Yeah. Yeah. But.
Street lawyer.
Yeah. And I stood the test. Yeah. Then, if you if you legislate an amendment, so you open up for the Constitutional Court issues for litigation. For instance, if you don't call public hearing for amendment, then you are going to be taken to the Constitutional Court. Then it will be answered right. Then
I'm getting worried. And if amendment comes forth, that's what we're actually going to do.
Yeah.
So we remove the hearings on the amendments. Okay?
Yeah.
Agreed. Okay. It's paralegal. Is a legal person with a handicap.
I'm saying for the proposals of consulting to maybe we should go back to like an alter suggested because we have agreed that the amendments will be, you know, the public hearing will cover even the proposed amendments in on appropriations and other matters.
Okay.
Change it to
the principle applies.
Yeah.
We have public hearings of wonderful
changes. I would just like to draw the committee's attention to the bigger process before we got here. I mean, we're trying to get rid of surprises in simple language. So we have this adoption of the Division of Revenue Bill, we have the adoption or some engagement with your fiscal framework. And that's going to start indicate what's going to happen later on. And then when the NTBPS comes, it gives us all that more information. And in the meantime, to dealing with the appropriation bill now. Now, I'm just trying to see how this is going to work. I mean, we're having a public hearing on this revenue bill, taxation laws bill or something, and we more or less know what we want in there. Whether we need to raise revenue or whether revenue is sufficient. Which would be such a nice day, we actually want to bring down some of the taxes. So, why do you, if you want your public engagement now, why not? Why do we want public engagement? To give us some kind of input on the amendments that is in a way predicted? Or do we want the public to maybe suggest other issues? But one must be careful how one puts it in there, because if you make amendments without the public's participation, the whole content, the whole purpose of the public changes, because they're going to say, you made this amendment yesterday or last week. We didn't have enough sufficient time to look at it. Whereas when we're dealing with the bill, of course, that bill will be in the pipeline. There will be a draft published of that. Okay, it's a taxation laws bill, it's not the appropriation law. So there will be a publication and it will be more open. So just those realities.
And we also must remember that we have the current practice, which we should not lose sight of. This program is
You know, the revenue bill comes before you, you have hearings, people submit, on the basis of those hearings, you make certain recommendations. Here there's an additional clause that any amendments, the minister must at least give 14 days, must be able to respond to any amendment, because this is a revenue law. Okay. All right, then you make your amendments and you pass the bill. Why have a second round of hearings on amendments? Because, you know, what often happens with these revenue, well, look, in actual fact, this isn't going to be the major revenue bill. This is the income tax schedule. And people will just be submitting on whether, you know, on whether this tax is appropriate tax to increase or decrease and stuff like that. You know, it's not big deal stuff.
Okay.
I just
Everyone else is adequate to comment. Let's proceed. proceed there, Albert. I said to Greg, you must look after you, he says, but he escort you out of
Sita.
Your mic is on, Alta, whilst your conversation continues.
And we are recording.
Your mic is on whilst your conversation. But I actually wanted you to proceed now. This is what you have caused also.
Yeah.
Not it was adequately covered.
Yeah.
And because of that consultation which was okay, go ahead.
Well, I need to ask her, then I just have to tell a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, I just want my colleagues to assist me here, so that I should just be at ease. About the process, the revenue loss is tabled before us. The company tax is 28%. Then the committee say, I just want to broader question. Can the committee then say 28% is still too high? You are at 25%. Then personal income tax is 32%, maybe 35%. VAT, cut on chickens and whatever. Chicken wings and then the increase on bread or legs. So I just want you to be clear. And how does that physical frame limit us or guide us? If I could be assisted.
And when does it come? That's the question you have to do.
Okay.
Chair, that's part of my consultation. was to check whether my thinking is in the right direction in terms of procedure. But I think if we look at what we've put for the main appropriation bill, the hurdles that portfolio committees and effectively the appropriation committee must jump through before an amendment can go, we have procedurally actually limited the amendment power significantly. And here we're dealing with the revenue bills. I mean, I'm thinking of Ghana, where there was a proposal to raise VAT by 2% or something, and it caused riots. So if you, as it stands currently under this clause, Parliament can make those amendments. It can say no, bring the company tax down to 25% and increase VAT. It's not that good. So if you look at the hurdles on the current proposal that the committee needs to jump through, they're quite easy compared to the appropriation side. I mean, the report only requires a fiscal framework, which is a significant limit. It needs to ensure the appropriate balance. It needs to look at the development of the economy and growth potential and everything that's in the fiscal responsibility clause. But do we want, in terms of what's in the report, do we want the committee also to indicate what the impact may be on different taxpayers, for example? So do we want to make it a little bit more onerous, for the committee to amend? That was my one question. And the other question was that we've got two questions for the committee to deliberate.
Is she asking questions or the one supposed to ask questions for to her so that she can assist her?
debate and then once we have deliberated on then she will be able to advise us accordingly. She's not going to think, she's not going to think for the committee.
Let me.
She wants to get the full understanding of what
the other issue.
I think Mr. Nguni wants to deal with the issue.
Oh, yeah, I just want to point to the way I think of
logically. It's going to impact the fiscal responsibility. You said it's going to limit us or set the limits to which we are going to amend the budget. Now, if you come and say, in terms of tax revenue, reduce company tax by 8%, 25%,
yeah.
Which means we are reducing now the budget itself, and of which we are changing the fiscal responsibility to a lower level, or we are making a debt drop smaller. But if we say we increase VAT by 10%, 3% to cover the costs or to balance the budget, trade off, okay, we might exceed the fiscal responsibility, or we might exceed actually the revenue that we are going to collect, because there will be more people paying VAT, even the poor. But then you have the output, of which the political instability, of which that the core function of the budget office to tell us, if you increase VAT, you reduce company tax, or which cause this social instability. And as a result, you must be careful if you increase VAT or you increase the PAT, whatever, PIT. So that's the way I understand it. That way, if you pass fiscal responsibility, when it comes to revenue laws, you must make sure that we are within the fiscal responsibility, or the revenue laws are going to actually exceed it. In that case, we have a surplus of the deficit. That's the way I understand it.
Yes,
Bob?
Chairperson, I certainly appreciate the logic, thank you. Of course, mine may be somewhat different, but nevertheless logical. What I was looking at is that the executives do not have a monopoly on what they perceive as the right configuration within the revenue. I think that's really what we're getting at. If they have that monopoly and we're unable, we don't have the research resources, if you like, to be able to do the kind of analysis they may do, then I would agree with that. But as I see it, the time will come. I personally don't think that time will be here next year. The time will come when that expertise and those resources will be of such a nature that Parliament will be able to reconfigure to some degree the revenue laws. So the quick and still retain political stability, etc., etc. The problem is, do we phase in that kind of power? Because if we make a mistake, then after all, you could argue the executive itself, I don't want to use the word mistake, but has underestimated some of the revenue and there's been overshooting here and there. And I don't think that's so much a mistake as certain macro global economic conditions prevailing. So my point is, do we want to ensure that we have that power, but that we don't necessarily exercise it or we phase it in? Because I do think we should have that power. But I'm saying, as for practical purposes, I don't see us being able to exercise it in the near future. You know, maybe in more the medium to long term future.
I think I also wanted to raise the last point before she was interrupted. I wanted to come up with that. So, I've got certain views.
You seem to know what the last one is.
No, I don't know, but she was the second point.
Okay, absolutely. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. The other issue I wanted to put on the table, was that the committee has indicated that the framework seems adequate for passing the budgetary bills, the revenue budgetary bills, but the question is whether it is adequate for passing other types of money bills that are revenue bills, such as mine levies or the road petrol levy, etc., for the country.
Okay. Mr. Blotto.
No, Chair, this is a complex matter, because as Mr. Mugunya has indicated, when we gave instructions to ALTA at one stage, my understanding was that the financial responsibility clause would apply to the whole thing. But now, the question that I would still have, because if you look at the appropriation side, there are a lot of steps that you have to go through. So I'm not sure whether on the revenue side, I don't want it to be a too complicated bill. But if you look at the appropriation, there are steps and there are checks and balances and things like that. But on the revenue side, it's just open. And coming back to the issue that is raised by Mrs. Farbs, that whether we need to face the in approach or not, my problem is that in law, not a lawyer, you need legal certainty. Everything has to be put in place. It's then you can decide, as the institution, that we are not exercising these powers now until we have sufficient capacity. Because for me, the challenge is it has far-reaching macroeconomic policies implications. For example, I mean, you say we want to reduce VAT. And these things are quantifiable. It's not that they are not quantifiable. They are quantifiable. You can come with a rough estimate to say if I reduce VAT on whatever, we are going to lose a revenue of $10 billion permanently every year. But we are going to compensate this loss of revenue by increasing company tax by 2%. It's quantifiable. Already we have got a rough estimate that if you increase the company tax by 2%, it will offset the loss that you have incurred in VAT. So, I don't know. You see, my problem I'm still with, those type of changes, we can't just do them willingly and say, no, you know, like, you know, bookkeeping exercise. I've lost here, I must gain here. You know, the economy doesn't work that way. So there are many implications of that happening. So I'm not sure whether, even in terms of revenue, we need guidelines or onerous processes that have to be put into place. That's just my challenge.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair. My sitting on this side, I will discuss with you outside of the meeting what I've experienced personally. But it's not part of what I wanted to say. I'm partially covered by Honorable Member Mwaka. Then it will go back to what Honorable Walker said yesterday about the chairman, more than and so on. For instance, if you are in jail, this committee can meet the committee secretary, and the committee secretary can give you almost everything, while resources. You see? Now, if you start to see that you can also amend the revenues and tax rates based on that, do you have resources whereby you can be able to persuade Treasury and everybody else that really we can increase or decrease that and increase in the argument between company tax based on what have you checked? Then therefore it goes back to the point of resources to the committee. Not only your budget office and so on, even people and any other committee, but you need resources and things so that when members are speaking on this particular issue, even resource the members too, so that they can be able to make a meaningful impact, because this issue that has a correctly put by a Congress after, they've got far-reaching implications. And you can't legislate today, and take it like an Icarus scenario, which is you rise now and you fall by tomorrow. When you have to take a flying flamingo scenario. Thank you.
in this whole challenge, if we want to go back to the fiscal framework and the fiscal responsibilities, clearly that is not just an obligation on the appropriation side, but on the revenue side as well. So if you follow that, those rules, if I can call it that, then surely you must look at the macroeconomic picture holistically anyway. So you can't just nilly-willy go and change things. But obviously, if you consider certain amendments, you have to analyze the whole thing. And I think that implies everything that has now been said. You know? And in my view, this has already been provided for in here. So we must not try to reinvent the wheel.
I think some extent she has to say now. Well, I'm adequately covered, but it's just I just wanted to make a point that you see, when you legislate now, it's not that actually we just increasing or reducing revenue, but we are actually trying to influence policy, influence the outcomes. That's the main issue. To some extent, the fiscal responsibility has put some limits to say, you know, how far can we go in changing the policy. But it will be the responsibility or the role, co-function of the budget office to say, if you change this tax law, these are the implications that you they are coming in the communities or in the country. So that we before you could actually say, do we need those powers? No, I think let's have the budget committee up and running. And then thereafter, members must be fully resourced, as the committee has said. We need, you know, legal or other some expertise in members of when we take those decisions, because they themselves need to be ready, at least they sharp on other issues.
Okay,
we're faced with the reality, which also keeps on reminding me, not now, but certainly many previous occasions, that once we've passed the Division of Revenue Act, that's it. You can't raise more revenue because you've divided it amongst three spheres of government. And so you can't now start raising revenue because then you've got to pass another Division of Revenue Act. You know, so you're limited already by your Division of Revenue Act. I must say that in the early years of Parliament, in fact, in our first parliamentary sitting ever on the budget, we changed the income tax schedule. And it was a very interesting interchange. It was when Jill Marcus was chairing. And we were presented with this income tax schedule, and we said, no, but this puts an incredibly heavy, the impact is more on the poor than on the rich. And there was a huge argument with the tax people who were presenting this. And then we requested outside people to come with alternative analysis, and it turned out that that was correct, that in fact our perception was indeed correct, and it was later extended to. And in that sense, the income tax schedule was changed so that the burden wasn't carried by the poor, as it had been. And as you will see, all the time, whenever these income tax schedules are tabled before Parliament, Treasury is very careful to show what the implications are for different income groups. So, you know, there have been occasions where Parliament has played a useful role in drawing attention to some of these issues. I mean, I could say I don't want to reopen that debate because it's a contentious debate. But just there must be at some stage when you do say, you know, raising your VAT on certain foodstuffs might be appropriate. You know, you might want to engage on that debate. But I do agree with my colleagues here. And I mean, given that the revenue is already at a ceiling, so you can't change upwards or downwards, whatever change you're going to make, you've got to compensate somewhere else because you're in this tight bind. And I think that you either then got to decide that you pass the revenue schedule first, before the income tax schedule first, before you pass the Division of Revenue Act. And that's one way of getting around the issue. I would suggest that maybe, I was going to suggest that we go back to the notion of a draft coming before us and discuss them more. But in effect, it's nonsense because it makes no difference whether you're doing a draft or not. I think that by passing the Division of Revenue Act, you are actually limiting your ability to tinker too much with that. Because once you start tinkering with the revenue, in fact, the intergovernmental fiscal relationships imposes a certain discipline on you. Because once you start tinkering with the figures, then you've got to go back to the NCOP, then you've got to get the provincial consent, the municipality, CELGA, because you're changing the allocations between the spheres of government. So I think we shouldn't be too panicked at this stage, but I do think that we need the minister to have to give an opinion, and maybe we need to build in something just more, slightly more onerous than us just simply amending. You know, there must be some kind of procedure that we need. I'm still thinking about this.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Just to note, technically, that the projections of revenue is done by SARS in the process, in consultation with the Treasury. But the databases on which those projections are done, SARS sits very tightly on them. They don't even want to release them to Treasury to do sort of, because that would give you significant information on the distribution of income. They don't even want to release those databases for that kind of work to be done because it's confidential information on taxpayers. So you have there a significant benefit on the side of the executive in terms of information, and I don't know whether in this bill you want to make provision that Parliament can have access for that to that information in order to consider its amendment or something in that direction.
I'm afraid the kennel of worms on the good. Don't go there.
Well, thank you, Chair. I think it is a very interesting dilemma, and I think it's important because it depends on where the source of this revenue is coming from. So if you move between categories of revenue received, you could still have the same overall picture. So perhaps in the fiscal framework, we would maybe want to have reference to, say, estimates of all revenue and sources of revenue or something, so that you would bear that in mind, so that if this dilemma came up and you said, well, let's do something and it could end up regressive, you don't want to do that. So maybe you'd bear in mind that this is the revenue, this is where it came from, now I'm looking at changing it, what does that actually mean? Bear in mind where it came from. Maybe that would assist. Thanks, Chair.
Ms. Fox? At the end of the day, the answers lie with you. Ms. Fox?
Thank you, Chairperson. You see, I'm beginning to find myself faced with a dilemma here. The question I'm putting before myself so that I can contribute here is, what on earth are we even suggesting there could be amendments that the minister could be looking at? We have no intention of passing any. I'm just wondering what these amendments could possibly be when we're not going to make any. That was one of the things as I looked here. The minister must be given 14 days to respond to any amendments that are proposed on the revenue. And we, in my opinion now, we won't be considering any form of amendment there. If that is not what we've understood by the word amendment there, then I'd like, and then and we may be referring to other forms of revenue bills other than the income, such as the mining levies and, you know, and that kind of thing, fair enough, and other royalties. If we're referring to things like the income tax schedule and VAT, you know, and this company's tax and so on and so forth, which really seem to be the area that we seem deeply concerned about here and shifting the balance, and also the indication that we have already taken upon ourselves to straitjacket ourselves for very important reasons, which I agree with, you know, the fiscal framework and so on and responsibility. My concern is this. We're drafting, or we're trying to put forward an amendment of Money Bills Act, and that includes revenue. We're trying to open that door for ourselves in a responsible manner. And what I wouldn't like to see happen, Chairperson, is that capacity or power to amend the revenue laws removed, you know, that we ourselves remove it from ourselves. I think that would be wrong. It would be, in fact, disadvantageous. I think we need to retain that. With respect to phasing in and not phasing in, I must disagree somewhat in that regard, because as we know, our own constitution gave periods of time in which certain legislation would have to be passed in deadlines, but ensured that there would be that opportunity. It was progressive. My proposal is simply to not remove or close that door, but to recognize we don't have the resources to do it right now. We don't. But that we shouldn't close the door, and we should enable ourselves in this legislation to say it needs to be reviewed in 4 years or 5 years. We need to have that door there. That's all I am saying, because I do think that just as I was very pleased that, you know, Comrade Barbara, Ms. Hogan had made that reference to Jill Marcus, because indeed that was what had jogged my memory earlier on. And who is to say we won't come across a similar experience? The people currently in the French Room, and our current, and I've been automatically switched off through length of time, but it's such an important point, Chairperson. I feel strongly about it. I do think that there will come a time, especially as we're focusing more and more on poverty and our whole national situation and international situation has become so much more fluid. It may be that the executive itself doesn't in 10 years put an appropriate revenue bill on the table, and then we would have locked ourselves out of the process.
Members must also remember that I also have powers to amend your speaking time.
Yes, I do apologize.
Yeah, and from time to time now I'm going to begin exercising those powers. Mr. Singh, Mr. Balotto, and Ms. Hogan.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to pick up on the words that Ms. Fox used, straitjacketing. Are we not straitjacketing ourselves here? Because this bill deals with money bills and related matters. We seem to be just looking at how we're going to pass a revenue bill, pass an appropriation, pass adjustments and other money bills. And I agree that DORA is there, finished product, you can't do much. But doesn't this committee also have a responsibility to influence changes, for example, to the way you source revenue in the outer years? Isn't it an ongoing responsibility? Is this committee just going to sit when the bills come before us, before the committee, look at it and say, well, we amend, we don't amend, we had a public hearing, thank you very much, our work is over? I think it's work in progress for this committee. And maybe in the 1 year you can't influence the way the revenue is, but in the following year you can say, no, man, because we've been talking about zero rating on certain foodstuffs. We received a certain response from Treasury.
I knew you were going.
No, I'm using it as an example. But we haven't had the benefit of actually getting our own input and our own resource material and research done on that particular aspect. So I think it's work in progress. We're not shut out. We mustn't restrict ourselves to bills. The related matters in this legislation includes other issues that would affect the macroeconomic policy.
Maybe if we don't want to be tempted to do those things, maybe we should remove the item matters.
Let me propose a solution to the problem. Chair, I think the fiscal, when I'm reading the fiscal responsibility clause, it sort of guides us in what we are supposed to do, but it might not be sufficient. My proposal would be, can we have, let's say, if you check the fiscal responsibility clause 2A, B, C, you have 1 and then you have 4.1, 3A, B, C, have a D which would say, when you deal with revenue laws, you must consider the long term or the short term, long term macroeconomic implications of that exercise and its impact on different categories of taxpayers, whatever, full stop. wouldn't that assist us so that when we deal with any revenue laws as Parliament, we should be considering those broad issues? Because as currently as it's stated in 2A, it only says that we must consider the short-term, medium-term, long-term implications of the fiscal framework, division of revenue and national budget on the long-term growth potential of the economy and the development of the country. The budget here, national budget, maybe covers issues of revenue, but I think it's broad.
Okay. We need to come back to Mr. Lata's recommendation. Ms. Hogan?
Chair, I would like to follow up with Mr. Queen said, because I had a similar view. That, you know, in crafting this bill, when we were looking at the appropriation side, the idea was that, you know, come February, we're not going to be wanting to do 100 different amendments. The battle must have been fought out in trying to influence Treasury long before it gets tabled here. In fact, it would be a sign of weakness if you have now got to stop bringing in amendments, because you haven't fought through the issues in your budget review and recommendations and all of that, you know. And quite frankly, trying to bring a host of amendments in February, you know, when the deed is done, as it were, is very destabilizing for any government, because it brings uncertainty into the whole game. You, the DG, don't know what you're going to be busy signing until Parliament passes your thing in June. So the issue is that you are trying to influence, but you do actually still have the powers. You're not taking the powers away from yourself, but in the last resort, you're going to exercise those powers. Right. So it's not like you're trying to create another budget. You're not trying to initiate. Now, the third thing that Mr. Singh was saying about was revenue. The debates that will come before us when we do debating revenue, the income tax schedule, are the famous debates that we know. What is company tax? Is it too high, too low? Is personal income tax too high, too low? Which income group is succeeding, which group is? That, what do we zero rate, what we don't? Do we put that up? Do we keep it down? Do we keep it constant? You know, there's not much more to these debates than those basic issues, but they're not related to issues around, well, we need more money, and therefore we've got to raise all of this, because we're not talking about lending, borrowing. We're talking about a different set of issues. When you're looking at revenue, it's your relationship to the individual citizen in the country and what you take from that citizen as a government. It's your relationship to a company, what you take from that company as a government. And it's your relationship to income groups, what you take from different income groups. I mean, that's the heart of the debate. So, I don't know, I don't want to bring in a whole lot of procedures, because that's getting things, but is there not an opportunity somewhere along the line prior to the tabling for Parliament, for PCOP, to have hearings on a draft income tax schedule? Just a draft. Do you know what I mean? Not around the February period, but before. Maybe government already knows what the income tax schedule, they might not know how much money they're going to get, but they will have a certain idea of what they want, what they can reasonably start, what percentages they can start be putting in, because they, you know, they do have a certain thing of like the 25% of GDP. So that we can just have a draft, so that we can have the views, we can discuss it and whatever, so that when it comes before us, it's virtually, we've argued it out and whatever. So the draft comes much earlier on in the period. And I don't know if they can do it. Maybe Treasury can help us here. How early could a draft income tax schedule be tabled?
Okay,
no, that's for the figures. That's for the amount.
I don't think National Treasury has the answer.
You see, Chair, because you can understand the Treasury can't come with the amount of the revenue for the division of for DORA, because that's got to be when income tax year comes. But for the percentages that you're going to be, see, those principles are, you're not saying, you know, I'm going to charge 25% levy, 25% company tax, because I want to get so much money. You're coming from a different set of perspectives. So can't we look at a draft income tax schedule being right early on, even maybe, and could we not be in discussion with Treasury about that? So if we can have all the debates, reach some kind of consensus, and if there is no consensus, then we know what we're letting ourselves in for if we amend. Usually then have some...
Not the okay. Estimates of revenue?
I would like us now to find a way going forward. We can take ANTA and Mr. Lotto have made a recommendation with regards to the picking up of the fiscal responsibility trust.
Yeah.
Can we look at that? Okay. Yeah.
Chair, on the draft revenue bill or draft income schedule, as far as I understand Treasury's process, what happens is that schedule is only finalized after the December revenue take, because it's only then that you can see what you, I mean, the way the process works is there's sort of a target GDP percentage of revenue, and how that is made up in order to cover expenditure, etc., it's only finalized after December. That's the one side of the issue. But also the other side of the issue is whether that requirement is valid, but it's a sort of a long-standing requirement for some secrecy around the revenue bills, because you don't want the market to maneuver itself prior to the announcement. That's also why they immediately valid the moment the minister makes the announcement. But that's, instead of that, it doesn't preclude the possibility of the committee having a policy discussion, legislating in the bill for a policy discussion session late in the previous year with the ministry.
Now the NCBT is
On revenue policy. Mm. When you don't look at numbers, you don't look at exact distribution, but then Parliament can make its views known or its wishes known prior to February. That's a good idea.
Okay.
You can have a policy debate.
Yeah, where do we move that into the TDPS process, in that way,
but in the bill, Frank, I don't know what you think, but Jenkins, you could possibly, I think it would be better or more clear where it belongs if you put it in the revenue bill schedule. That's like prior to that, these peacock must have it.
Okay. Can we do that then?
Chairperson, it seems we are afraid to say we will be able to amend the money bill or the budget, let's say the budget, up or down. So we are afraid to explicitly say that we know, implicitly say, let's change the fiscal responsibility, let's look at DORA. Why don't you put a clause there to say, no, if Parliament amends the budget, can amend the budget to the threshold we're talking about? To such an extent, we cannot amend the budget past this percentage of GDP. Why don't you put a clause like that? So we know from the record that we can amend the budget, but we're not going to pass this threshold.
Okay, but now evaluate what the difference between what Mguni is saying, what Mr. Mguni is saying, and the issue of being governed by our fiscal responsibility.
In effect, DORA does that, because DORA says you've got so much money, you pass DORA, you can't spend more than what you've got.
You can raise more than what
you've got. No, but revenue includes borrowing.
Yeah.
So
revenue is not just tax.
You can't raise more than that.
So once you've got DORA, DORA says you can't spend more than that, because otherwise you're contravening intergovernmental fiscal relations. then you've got to have repeat DORAs and keep on changing DORAs all the time.
And have an amended, an amended division of revenue.
But you've got to be equitable division of revenue.
Mr. Blodgett, let's yeah. Now, you know,
I'm not sure. Let me take your time. I think the proposal by Alton might help us a lot to have that general policy discussion at the appropriate time. Because the challenge that I'm seeing with DORA, it puts a ceiling on your expenditure. It's the division of what you have, of the cake that you have, that DORA. So you cut the cake that you have for the three spheres. So this other side, you can raise it and have a surplus and not be spending and wait for the moment when it has to be spent.
This cut is something first to help analyze
in what way shape.
In your fiscal, if you look at the elements of the fiscal clause and also your fiscal responsibility clause.
That's the point I was raising about the fiscal responsibility.
Yes, let's build that one up.
You see, because for me, DORA is adequate for the expenditure side, for the appropriation side. But for the revenue, for the revenue side, the fiscal framework can assist in closing that ceiling, because you said a percentage of the GDP. I think but I think this other clause might have assisted.
Okay.
Of having the policy discussion.
Ms. Fox and
I have been warned about the time. Thank you, Chair. just on this issue, it's slowly the discussions seem now to be able to be in line with a lot more that I'm hearing. Put forward, in particular this concept of policy proposals, because you see, if we're able to influence that, then the configuration itself will be affected. Because we're not talking about the ceiling of what is raised, because we say that will be decided in December when we have all those figures. But rather we are talking about the policy configurations of that, which is what I was talking about. So I do believe I'm adequately covered. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Next,
Mr. Chair, can I just find out on that? Is it only a discussion on this policy principles, or will there be recommendations from the committee? Because if there's recommendations, then you can later on say, how have you responded to the recommendations? It's only discussions, it is informal, it is...
Is that your consultation continuing this side, or are we getting any responses?
Yeah, recommendation.
A recommendation. Okay. Can we read it? Is this a sign of
the national adjustments budget. The note in blue on top of the proposals, and again, these are clearly just to put proposals on the table for the committee to discuss. The time frames around the national adjustment budget is necessarily tight, because by the time the budget comes, there are only 5 months left of the fiscal year. If it comes at the time when it comes currently, which is at the end of October. The proposal set out here proposes a process in Parliament that lasts 30 days after the tabling of the National Adjustment Budget. It says that the Minister must table the National Adjustment Budget in Parliament in accordance with Section 30 of the Public Finance Management Act, and there it sets out what the National Adjustment Budget comprises.
If the adjustment budget necessitates a revision of the approved fiscal framework, so if you've raised more revenue or there has been unforeseen, etc., in terms of CFMA expenditure, the Minister must table a revised framework with a national adjustments budget. If the adjustments budget also necessitates a revision of the Division of Revenue Act, or a Division of Revenue Amendment Act, so it could be, the Minister must table a Division of Revenue Amendment Bill with a revised fiscal framework, and the Adjustment Appropriation Bill must be tabled with the national annual, with the annual adjustments budget, the national adjustments budget. If the Minister has tabled the revised fiscal framework, that framework must go to the Committee on Finance. If he's able to revise the Division of Revenue Bill, that framework must be referred to a joint sitting of the Appropriations Committee after the adoption of the fiscal framework. With other words, the fiscal framework, as it does currently, just goes, as far as I understand, just goes to the National Assembly Finance Committee. And goes straight to the NCFB. It doesn't, it's not also referred to the NCFB Appropriations Committee, but a draft revision of DORA clearly needs to be considered by the both committees, because it will be a Section 76 bill. So in order to cut the time a bit shorter, the two committees will sit together, the NCFB and National Assembly Appropriations Committee will sit together on the revised DORA. So it then says that 9 days after the tabling of the National Adjustment Budget, the revised fiscal framework must be presented in a report to the respective houses for consideration and adoption by resolution. The report may propose amendments, and if the report proposes amendments, the Minister of Finance must get 2 days to respond to the proposed amendment, and the committee must submit the reports, the response of the minister, together with the reports. So that's the first 9 days, and then the fiscal framework is adopted. Subsequently, there's 9 days for the adoption of the draft DORA. So then 9 days after the adoption of the fiscal framework, the respective Appropriations Committee must submit a report to the respective houses on the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill for consideration and adoption. It may propose amendments. It must give the Minister at least 4 days. And of course, here is also the option of the Minister and other affected members of Parliament, of Cabinet, sorry. To the report and proposed amendments, and the committees must submit the responses together with the report. Then you get to, after 18 days, you get to the Adjustment Appropriation Bill. That must be referred to the National Assembly Appropriations Committee, and again there's a query as to whether it should be a joint sitting, but if I understand correctly, currently it's just the National Assembly that deals with the bill, so it could then again only be the National Assembly Appropriations Committee, and it goes straight to the NCLP for passing. If there are a revised fiscal framework and a Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, this referral can only occur after the passing of the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. The Rules of Parliament must then allow for a procedure for amendments to the Adjustment Appropriation Bill and any special Adjustment Appropriation Bills, and this procedure must require the Appropriation Committee to consolidate comments on an amendment, same as in the earlier formulation, on the Appropriation Bill and prepare a report to the relevant House. And subsection 8B makes then provision for a mini-process, as happened in February. But the option, of course, there is to say, because it's the adjustment budget and you have limited time, that it would only be the Appropriation Committee that considers the proposed adjustment
to the February budget, and that it may, in the period of time allocated to it, it may, in terms of the rules of the House, but jointly with some of the portfolio committees to look at specific adjustments. So there's various ways of configuring a more compressed or an amended process. So, but clause 8B still assumes that there will be a mini process that, for the adjustment budget. C is the same as in the previous clause, authorise the Committee on Appropriations to mediate. Just to go back to B quickly, if there is a mini adjustment, then a mini process with the portfolio committees as in February, then there's a clause that's very similar to the one that's for the main appropriation bill, which is B sub-clause. D is to empower the Appropriations Committee to commend to the House that proposed amendments by other committees are rejected, with the sort of revised wording that we discussed earlier for the other clause in the main appropriation bill section. And that the adopted division of revenue with the same conditions as applied to the main appropriation bill. And then if amendment to the adjustment appropriation bill, it does look like late tonight, is proposed by the committee, the minister must be given at least 4 days to respond to those. And then clause 10 is that the report provided to the House must be in compliance with the section where we set out requirements for the reports that was set out in the main appropriation bill section, but that it must be submitted to the House no later than 30 days after the tabling of the National Adjustment Budget. So that's set a time limit for Parliament to pass the adjustment budget, and it must be accompanied by a response of the Minister to any proposed amendments.
Let's stay adjustments. Members, Ms. Fox, Mr. Steen.
Yeah, Ms. Fox.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. One small thing to begin with on 8BA, where we would just include the concept of transfers there as agreed. The other point, again, is also perhaps just a small one. Earlier on in our discussion and deliberations, we thought it inadvisable to indicate to the House that we rejected what another committee was saying, but rather phrased it somewhat differently as part of the formal process we would have been engaged with. And then the other issue is just earlier on here, under 6, the report, 6A there, I think it is, the report may propose amendments to the Division of Revenue Amendments Bill, but it's referring to these bills, including the fiscal reports, etc., being given, going to each House simultaneously, or being reported in each House simultaneously. That's the impression I got here. First of all, is this the case, or is it rather not simultaneously, but one after the other, as we're currently observing? Just a clarification on that one. And the other one is related, of course, to the special adjustments, which in one's experience have come up when it couldn't wait for the adjustments to come about for one reason or another. Now, the last special adjustments came on the heels of the adjustments. In fact, couple of weeks or so apart, which I'm trying to look at the processes here, which would make it quite difficult to follow these processes for each one. You see, we get the special one, coming in mid-October, as it were, then you know, towards the end, and you have to follow all these processes, then you get the adjustments coming as it does in November. I'm just asking us to look at some of the technicalities involved in a late special adjustment, or a special adjustment very closely in time linked to the adjustment appropriation. Will we have time to carry out all of the processes that are envisaged here?
Thank you, Chair. I take the point of Ms. Fobbs about the late special adjustments. But you see, the point is here, we don't want surprises. I mean, surely these late special adjustments are thought of well, in good time. It's just brought to us, you know, very late. So, you know, we shouldn't make it good for them to bring it late to us. But I understand the point that there should be a differentiation between the adjustments and the special adjustment. Therefore, in 8, you talk about adjustment appropriation and special adjustment. But then in 7, you talk about the adjustment. So maybe adjustment appropriation bills, that sentence in 7. Secondly, there are just general things, Chair, of the Committee on Appropriations and standing rules which need to be brought in here. Also, these time frames, you know, I don't know, the 2 days. And in legal parlance, is 2 days, 2 working days, is 9 days, 9 working days, or is it calendar days? You know, if it's just 2 days, I mean, I don't know if we are being fair here to the minister, anybody, to say we will give you 2 days. But maybe it generally means working days. In legislation, a day is a working day. But even 2 working days, something that we need to consider, given the compressed time we have overall, but still, I think, you know, it's not fair.
Okay.
If none, do we want to engage with the points that have been raised by Ms. Fobbs and Mr. Singh? I'd like to have a look.
Chair, I need to go and read up the PFMA exactly what the differences between a special adjustment bill and an adjustment bill. As far as I remember, the PFMA there used to be supplementary bills, but the PFMA actually removed them and said that the adjustment bill can include both adjustments to the February real substantive or also issues that were announced in the budget but not included in the... So we don't have the supplementary bills that we used to get anymore. And then the special adjustments are bills that, such as the allocation to a state-owned enterprise that suddenly arises in urgent at a point in the year. And perhaps those... They shouldn't come right after the actual adjustment process, but you do want perhaps the proper process around them to look at them. So, can I get the committee's permission just to go and read up and see what the differences are between them?
Okay.
No, not specifically on this point.
There's just one thing which applies across the board, except perhaps to the main, which is highly governed on the timing side, you know, beginning of the financial year, etc. But when it comes to these other bills, there's nothing in law that I'm aware of that says that they may not be done in December. Nothing that would preclude that. Now, we could find ourselves here on Family Day, you know, perusing a special adjustment. legally we could, and it's better not to leave too much to chance, because we've seen how rules have found their way in the week before Christmas, you know. So I just want that clear that there will be no special. No ordinary adjustments after the first week in December.
Okay. And the signing of
and
the other issues that
kind of
constituency.
When the media is also on there.
Yeah.
I don't know how to deal with that, because I remember in some of the legislation they referred to our working to their parliamentary working days.
Yeah.
The days when parliament is in session and all those things. I don't know whether it was created.
Yeah.
It's one of the things we would need to explore. I don't know, but it is one piece of legislation where we were able to put that in.
Yeah.
When they referred to 2 days, the parliamentary working days.
In the education,
okay, let's take the other money bills.
Thank you, Chair. In the bill so far, we, in terms of the constitution, that the part of the constitution that defines money bills, we've covered all money bills except money bills that may authorize direct charges against the revenue fund. So that would be in principle the only bill that this last section applies to, because the other revenue bills are already covered in the revenue bill section. The current wording basically proposes that it's referred to the respective committee on appropriations, that the rules of parliament must prescribe a procedure for a money bill other than those covered in sections 10, 11 and 12, which is the main appropriation revenue bills and adjustment budget. Allow for the committee to conduct hearings on the bill, and require the committee to submit a report on the bill to the House. If amendments to a money bill other than to other money bill is proposed by the committee, the minister must be given at least 14 days to respond to any amendments. The report of the committee must demonstrate how the proposed amendments are consistent with the prevailing fiscal framework. And here is perhaps an area that the committee may want to look at. What that means is that if the executive plans to introduce money bills during the year, that should already be taken into account in the fiscal framework that is proposed in the beginning of the year. Sorry, can I correct myself there? Our current definition of the fiscal framework talks about estimates of revenue and estimates of expenditure, and we ask for additional information on extra budgetary funds. So that means fiscal responsibility, of course. The question is whether that estimate of expenditure would include expenditure outside of what is in the appropriations bill and in DORA, and whether it will include extra budgetary expenditure such as the road fund, the road accident fund, the ones that we have currently, whether those are explicitly included in our fiscal framework or whether they're excluded in terms of the definition. The fuel levy, for example, is that included, and it's concomitant expenditure included in our fiscal framework definition or not, because that impacts on this on clause subclause 4A. Yeah.
Can't you exercise your right to cut it short?
Sorry.
No, that's it.
The motion speaks to complicated in a good way.
No, under my very.
Why does she have to? Why does she have to put on this?
Open all these cans and put them on the table. Go ahead.
And then for. Again, the report must fulfill the requirements of the section 4 and fiscal responsibility, and that's rather carelessly drafted because the report clearly cannot fulfill the responsibility. But the intention is that when Parliament amends, it must take regard of the fiscal responsibility clause, and it must be accompanied by the Minister's response to any proposed amendments. And of course, all the standard ones we have now about standing rules must also be included.
Okay. Members?
I don't know what you think.
Yeah. Question about the
Okay. We're running into the dance. Are there any comments on the passing of others? Because I'm going to ask now.
Well, that one too, that one's been intimidated, Chair.
No, I'm not intimidated. You tell us. You must be part of the
system. There's still a lot of work to be done.
Yeah.
You've packed things in the parking lot.
Yeah,
that's how. And we're not going into Hope Street. We would need to open the parking lot and give you those things. And the process in the house is one of those that are parked there but becomes critical as we move towards, you know, the end of the process. But again, the issue of the amendment power of themselves still with a lot of Ms. Pabst, I want you to comment on this one because I want you to propose a way forward to the commissioners to consider it.
There's too many chairs, such as
there are
issues.
Yeah.
Which one were you talking about?
No. We just dealt now with the passing of other manifest.
Oh, that one.
I want you to talk to that one. If you're not talking to that one, you're talking to others, then we'll leave them for the process that I'm going to.
No, Chair, I am talking to others, but I wasn't sure if I could
pass. Yeah, yeah, no, I just wanted that for now, just comment
on it. No, you know, the two that sprang to mind, Chair, which, you know, now that we raised them, it strikes me they could really have had a serious impact on the fiscal framework and other issues, but of course we never considered them then, in light of all the ring fencing that went on. So, now that we have the parking lot and all of that. You know, when it comes to the fuel levy, Chairperson, and all fairness, particularly in times such as this, it will have an impact, or it can have a potential impact. And yet, we haven't included that, or we haven't made that reference, and perhaps we needed to, on hindsight, to have thought of that. On the other hand, when it comes to these direct charges, we may need then to bring back the fiscal framework and that kind of thing to take cognizance of
it. It doesn't matter where we are. If there are issues that you feel belong to the fiscal framework, there's nothing wrong with us going back there. He has just raised an issue where we would need to beef up the fiscal framework.
Okay.
In all areas where we find that there's something that needs strengthening of the fiscal framework or the fiscal development, we would just have to do that. But I want us now to look at the process going forward so that we know when, because we can't deal with one of those issues and leave all the others, because like I indicated, we need to go now and open capital in that way. Look, we are now at a point where, in terms of our program, we are supposed to have finished this meeting. And I'm beginning to hear people complaining about not only mental and intellectual exhaustion, but also physical exhaustion.
Yeah.
And I do not want to proceed with you when you are not on our way. And when you no longer have that energy that was charged by your multivitamin in the morning. I want you to go ahead and take more. But members, we need to look at the first thing I would want us to consider is that we, in terms of our instruction from the House, we are supposed to report by the 15th, which is this coming Friday. And I did indicate yesterday that we would not be able to finalize this before the 15th, and we therefore would have to submit a report, but a report that also indicates how much time the committee requires. In terms of this report, what we're saying is that, let me read the report. The report says that the Fellow Committee on Finance, having been instructed by the National Assembly to consider the procedure to amend money bills before Parliament with a view to introducing a bill dealing with the matter, see the merits of the proceedings of the National Assembly dated the 25th of June 2008, and the report as follows.
On the 25th of June, a resolution was passed by the Assembly mandating the Portfolio Committee on Finance to consider the subject of a procedure to amend money bills before Parliament with a view of 50% of bills within the mandate. The resolution requires the committee to report by the 15th of August 2008. The committee subsequently gave prior notice of the introduction of the draft legislation in the government gazette number 312348, dated the 10th of July 2008. The gazette also contained an invitation for interested persons and institutions to submit written submissions on the draft legislation. The committee held a public hearings on the submissions received. The committee is currently in the process of deliberating on the bill and is of the view that it will not be in a position to finalize its deliberations by the 15th of August, and accordingly request that it be given additional time to consider the draft legislation. My question now to the committee is if this is in order, but if we say we need to be given additional time, what's this additional time now? Because if we do not say, then Parliament is going to give us an additional 2 days that we also propose to the Minister of Finance.
Yeah.
So, yeah, can I?
One would rather want to think of hours rather than days, because when they go for shorter meetings, one would have thought something along the lines of about 12 hours would have been quite sufficient.
Like I said, in one day.
Mr. Butler?
It seems you have covered a lot of work earlier, but I mean, maybe, I think it would be safe to say, let's just say, give ourselves a maximum of 2 weeks. Because there are issues that I'm still debating in my head, which I'm not yet clear about. I'm not trying to complicate your issue. I think this my own thoughts. Let me express my own thoughts. Part of my thoughts say, let's finalize this thing within 2 weeks. I mean, within that period. And then ask the opinions of the implementers, FFC and whatever, and then let's adopt it. I don't know. What are the implications?
Okay, Mr. Mlondo is recommending 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Is there anybody that does not support 2 weeks? I think there is agreement that we, in our report, we request 2 weeks. Members will also recall that we circulated a letter from the Secretary to Parliament where he raised some issues. I trust that members have had sight of that, but when next we do it. But the other thing, members would recall, we did also circulate our program, because that would mean we would now need to adjust our program such that it accommodates that, because according to our program, we have a free Friday. And, no, you can't say thank you yet.
Supported by all.
No. You have forfeited that Friday now. You have forfeited that Friday because I'm looking at the date that I actually opened. Because other than that, next week, on Tuesday, we're dealing with some money bills. Tuesday we're dealing with the initial briefing on the draft revenue laws amendment bill, and we'll also have deliberations and formal consideration of the mineral and petroleum resource royalty bill, which will come before Parliament on the 21st, for me. And And then on Wednesday, the 20th, we have hearings on the draft revenue laws amendment bill, and on the 22nd, draft revenue laws amendment bill. But we will need to find time to begin to deal with this. So the first available day is Friday, the 15th. This Friday, yes.